Well, in the year 2805 AD, that's, 800 years from now, after the mass consumerism which was facilitated by the mega corporation by and large, the earth was abandoned. It's kind of hard when you're talking about the future and past tenses and that, so excuse my tenses. But this is bad news that I got when I was watching a movie with my 4-year-old the other day called WALL-E. Have you guys seen that cartoon? It's like a Disney WALL-E, and it's about a little robot. Now, I've always been fascinated by robots. You know, I grew up watching, Buck Rogers and Bitty Bitty Oh-Oh and, all that stuff. And so I thought this would be cool. I could introduce my son to the world of robots, and we sat down to watch this movie. And the little robot WALL-E stands for Waste Allocation Load Lifter Earth Class. And what happens is, after consumerism fails and the whole world sort of implodes because there's so much garbage all over the planet that it becomes unsustainable for human life, the humans all get into a spaceship and they go up into the space called the Axiom, and they just live up there until the planet can be sorted out. And they let these little robots run, and all the robots do is they find trash and they compact it and they put it in these massive towers going up into the sky. And eventually they all rust out and they all die over the hundreds of years, except there's this one surviving little robot, WALL-E, and for the first half of the movie you realize this can't possibly be a kid's movie because there's not even any dialogue. It's just these depressing scenes of what Earth would become like if we just let ourselves go. It's all the stuff that we buy and the containers that we buy for the stuff that we buy and the things that we buy to carry around the containers and store the containers for the stuff that we buy, and eventually the whole planet's covered in just stuff. And this little guy has never been deactivated, so he just keeps on packing all this trash. And so one day he finds a little plant, and he keeps this as a part of his collection of little knickknacks and that he picks up. And what happens is the Axiom space station sends probes to Earth every once in a while just to test if it's if humans are allowed to live there anymore. And one of the probes comes and he falls in love with her, and her name is Eve. Kind of biblical there as well. And she finds this plant and takes it back to the ship, and he goes with. And then it gets interesting, because then you meet the humans. And you see what humans would become like if they lived in a place where everything was done for them by robots. And he gets onto the space station, and every single task that you can imagine that a human needs done is done for them by robots. It's like having this army of robots just swarming around you, doing whatever you want. They make your food, they bring it to you, all the transportation is done by robots, everything in the whole place is done by robots. And so the commentary of the filmmakers, of course, is quite humorous, because all of these humans are just morbidly obese. They just sit in these beach chairs all day long that kind of move around by the robots, and all they do is eat and drink and be entertained, and they all have a TV that they're watching all the time, and they're absolutely useless. And there's some funny scenes in the movie where they have to do something as simple, to save all life on the planet. They have to press a button, and they just can't even get there because they're so fat and so lazy and just so out of it because everything's been done for them. And before we point too many fingers at our ancestors, the generations to come for 700 years, we need to look at our own lives. And in fact, we can look back a few thousand years and we can see what Solomon says about exactly this thing. So turn in your Bibles to Ecclesiastes chapter 2. And while you're going there, I just want to make a disclaimer from last week. I forgot to mention last week, as I was attacking alcohol and architecture, to mention that those things aren't in of themselves bad. It's when you try to find happiness in them. In the weeks past, we've looked at categories of luxury, categories of gifts that God has given to mankind, that when we try to find happiness in them, we are actually abusing them and going against what God given. And we looked at musings and amusings. Remember, thinking and learning and studying can actually make you depressed if you don't do it towards God and for God's glory. And then we looked at not only musings but amusings, entertainment, and just switching off your brain and just trying to be happy all the time. That too brings you terrible depression if you leave God out of your amusings. And then we looked at alcohol and how in Solomon's experiment, as he's using all of his wealth and resources to see what can make you happy, he actually tried to use alcohol and find that perfect level of intoxication where you're not so drunk that you lose your job, but you are drunk enough to just be happy all the time. And he saw, okay, well, that obviously didn't work either. And then we moved on to architecture and all of his building projects and all of his expansion and renovations and agriculture and irrigation and gardens. And at the end, he said it was still just emptiness, all is emptiness. And so I poked fun at, you know, granite countertops and owning your own home and building on and all that kind of stuff, all stuff which I've done. Those things aren't wrong in of themselves, but they are if you try to get your happiness from them. And everyone who's done a building project knows that after it's all done, there's still something missing. Although when this building's project's done, we will finally have arrived. Just remember that life is a goose chase without a goose. And as soon as you think that the goose is found in any one of these categories, you're missing the point of life. So we'll pick it up in verse 7 of chapter 2. This is the next part of his great experiment to find out what brings happiness. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the children of man. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for my toil. Okay, well, as the experiment continues, we're not going to unpack those last few verses just yet and how he's talking about he does get reward from some of this. We're going to focus mainly on verses 7 and 8. We're going to look for three more luxuries that don't bring happiness. That don't bring happiness so that you won't be distracted by convenience, that you won't be distracted by trying to focus your whole life around making it more convenient for you and thinking that you're going to get happiness out of that, because you won't, even if you did achieve that. We're going to look at maids, money, and music. And already you might be thinking, wait a minute, I have all three of those things. Hang on with me. They're not bad just because they're bad. They're bad if you try to find your happiness in them. So let's start off with maids. Look at verse 7. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. Now, just a footnote. Before you go out and buy a slave, this is not the Bible condoning slavery. Okay, you don't look at Solomon's life and see what he did and think, oh, it must be okay for me to do, because otherwise we'd all try and be drunk and happy all the time. Parts of his experiment were way outside of God's revealed will, way outside of the rules that God has laid down. For example, trying to get drunk to find happiness and getting concubines, which means over and above the many wives he also had these stripper girlfriends walking around his palace all the time. We're not saying that's okay. We're just saying this is what he did. This is what happened as he was trying to find it. And there are many people in the world who do try to find their happiness in these types of things. And one of them is slavery. Now, of course, we're going to apply it a little differently, as we will see. But he says in verse 7, I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. There were generations of slaves. His palace became a veritable slave colony, generating slaves that would all work for him. Now, just imagine you found a way of getting someone else to do everything that you don't like doing. Wouldn't that make you happy? That would make me happy. Just someone else does everything you don't want to do. They cook for you, they clean for you, they do your laundry, they pick up after you. Some of you call that living with your parents. And so it becomes a little difficult to move out. You have these 38-year-olds living with their mom because, yeah. Well, Solomon bought an army. He bought an army of workers to do anything that he didn't want to do. Just imagine this. Imagine having people do all these things for you, carry your shopping bags. Wouldn't that be great? When it gets heavy, you just say, slave, just carry these, or butler or whoever. Carry your shopping bags. Wash your dog. Wash your kids. Do your banking for you. Wouldn't that be great? How about cut your nails? Scrub your back. And give you a haircut whenever you want. Come here and cut my hair. And before you do, just give me one of those great head massages every day. go to the post office for you. Wouldn't that be great? Go Christmas shopping for you. And I would definitely hire a guy to go stand in line at Home Affairs for me. That would make me happy. Wouldn't that make you happy? It wouldn't, according to Solomon. Let me put it in a better perspective for us. Imagine you had someone to mow your lawn. You had someone to cook your food, clear your gutters, wash your car, dust your house, watch your kids, scrub your grout, fix your car. Wait, you say, I do have people that do those things for me. What are you saying? You're saying it's not okay to hire other people to do these things? I've got to do all this myself? I've got to change my own oil? No, it's okay for you to do those things, but not if you think that they're there for your happiness. It's okay to have convenience in your life. It's okay to pay for convenience in your life. It's okay to seek convenience in your life if you don't think that that convenience is there to make you happy. And this is where people derail, because we all want convenience. I mean, it's obviously you would much rather buy a loaf of bread than make a loaf of bread. I understand that. But it's when you think that convenience is there to make you happy. What happens when the convenience goes away? You know, the just anything that breaks in your house. Your dishwasher breaks for a week and you have to wash it with your own hands. You know, that now your happiness has taken a downturn because you put your happiness in your convenience. And a lot of what we go through that just becomes frustrating isn't really a real trial. It's not like we have necessarily got ill or bad news or anything. It's just a frustration because it's our convenience that's been taken away from us. I mean, is it a good day or a bad day when your garage door opener stops working and you have to get out of your car in the rain and open the door yourself? Now, trust me, friends, that's not a big trial in the grand scheme of things. And yet, how many people's happiness can really be shattered in a day because they get a flat tire on the way to work? Right? It's all about convenience. Now, we don't have slaves today, hopefully. Maybe some of you feel like you're the slave from the person you work for, but we do employ a small army of maids and gardeners and handymen and mechanics. And for a lot of you, we have appliances, right? Appliances. Think about, that's like a mechanical slave. It's like a little mechanical robot that just does stuff for you so you don't have to do it. How many of us really clean our own clothes? It doesn't count if you're the person that sticks it in the washing machine, by the way. No, cleaning your own clothes means getting the soap, heating the water with a flame, and then actually washing your clothes and hanging them out to dry. How many people actually do that these days, you know, in this church? I mean, in the world, that's most people. But we love our convenience. How many people wash your own dishes, guard your own homes, heat your own food? No, we have microwaves to do that, little robots. There's nothing wrong with hiring people to help you. Let me just say that again. I'm going to keep saying that every once in a while because I forgot to say it at all last week. You can't do your own heart surgery, for example, right? It's good to hire other people to help do things for you. Some of us can't fix our own car or pick our own carrots, right? It's nice to be able to go to the shop and someone's done all that for you. So if you can afford help and you pay fairly for your help, it's a gift from God to give you spare time so that you can use for His kingdom, that you can use for other profitable activities. Now, when your happiness is wrapped up in this kind of convenience that's available to you, then you're going to start feeling empty. Solomon had people to do things for him. He had people to do whatever he didn't want to do, and he said it made him feel empty. You would think it would make you feel happy, but we see the opposite in his life. I remember telling people in America when I moved there to study, and they were saying, you know, what's South Africa like? And we would talk about different things, and they were really astounded by the fact that I couldn't iron, that I didn't know how to do a load of laundry. I'd never done laundry myself. And one of my roommates had commented, did your mom really do all this stuff for you? I was like, no, my mom probably wouldn't know how to do this either. You know, we had a maid to do this for us. In fact, we had an ironing maid because there was just so much ironing all the time, and a separate maid for the other things. And I remember people thinking, wow. Like, were you guys really wealthy? And I mean, we were compared to a lot of parts of the world, but not really in South Africa, right? I mean, in our circles, it was normal. And I'd never even thought about that. And I remember one of them saying, wow, imagine what they would be like. I would love to just have a maid do all the stuff for me. That would make me happy, was the sentiment. And I hadn't even realized that. I didn't even realize. I mean, I got so used to it. And you see, that's Solomon's point. You have something that most people in the world just dream about. And was I happy every day of my life because I didn't have to iron my own clothes? No, I didn't even think about it. We don't even think about all the conveniences God gives us with cell phones. I mean, just not even a half a generation ago, we didn't have cell phones. You know, if you got stuck at school early or whatever and your dad was coming to pick you up in 3 hours' time, that was it. You sat there and waited for 3 hours if you didn't have the 20 cents that needed on the payphone. Well, usually the kids had broken the payphone by then. It wasn't such a thing as, I'll just call my dad so that he's waiting by the time the bus drops me off. It just doesn't work that way. We get used to these conveniences and our happiness gets entwined in them. Now, God doesn't give us these conveniences so that we can spend more time watching TV. He doesn't give us these conveniences to free up time so that we can take longer naps during the day. He gives it to us so that we can do something even more profitable. And it's going to look different in everyone's life. Don't do nothing. Avoid sloth. Avoid laziness. We can't do everything, which is what gives work to other people to do, right? But we also can't do nothing. We can't do everything. It's okay to have other people help you and bring convenience into your life. But friends, we don't have that convenience so that we can do less, so we can do nothing. Now, of all the categories that Solomon's experimenting in here, that people try to find happiness in, this particular category is the one that we would struggle the most with, those of us who like our sloth. Those of us who struggle with, you know, call it procrastination, if you will. Call it ADD, you know, not being able to focus on one task and see it all the way through. Call it laziness, whatever you will. But sloth is a hard condition to cure. And the scriptures describe people who don't want to work in very unflattering terms. Proverbs 26:14 says, and I mean, I love how picturesque Proverbs is, but when I read this, I don't actually think of the words that he uses. I think of a teenager. As a door turns on its hinges, so does a sluggard on his bed. You kind of picture your 17-year-old flopping out of bed and then just enough to flop back in. You know, it's just like a door on its hinges. It never moves away from its bed, right? I was like that as a teenager. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish, verse 15 says, but it wears him out to bring it back to his mouth. You know, that's like where my mom would, you know, book the appointment for my driver's license. You know, she would buy the book for me. She'd put it out there. Now, all you have to do is just do it. You know, it's like your hand's in the bowl. You've got the food. All you have to do is bring it to your mouth. And I'm like, I'm too tired. You know, it's the sluggard. Verse 16 says, the sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who can answer sensibly. For some reason, you just think that this convenience is there for you. And no matter why someone tells you to do something, you always come up with a reason not to. Why do I need to do that? Why, Dad, do I need to learn how to change a tire? I'll just call AA when that happens. Dad, why do I need to learn to drill a hole in the wall? I'll just call one of my friends with a drill to come over and do it for me. Well, that's kind of backfiring now that every time my wife wants something hung somewhere on the wall, I have to try to figure it out or call someone to help me. But you always come up with your excuses. You always come up with your reasons. You're wiser than seven men. Now, the problem with trying to find happiness in doing only what you want to do is that there are a lot of things that need to be done to get through life. And doing less of them makes your life harder and harder and harder. If you only focus on doing the things that you like doing, you would just have a year's worth of trash in your kitchen. You've got to take it out. It's one of those things. Proverbs 15:19 says this, the way of the sluggard is a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a level highway. You notice the contrast? The lazy person, the person doesn't want to work, the person wants other people to do all the dirty work for them. Their life is like a hedge of thorns. You've met people like this. They're just always late for everything. They're always disorganized. They can never get stuff done. Why? Because they don't have all their ducks in a row, because they're just lazy. They can't do the stuff that needs to be done. Whereas the upright person, you see that God actually puts a moral slant in this as well. This is a question of sin and not sin. The upright person, his life is like a level highway. He always has all these ducks in a row and everything. His shopping's always done way before Christmas time. Why? Because he's upright. Because he knows that he has to do work even though he doesn't want to. And this is sometimes the problem with convenience, is we get used to other people doing the dirty work for us, and some stuff we just don't have slaves to do. right? Standing in line at home affairs and things like that. So work is a gift from God. Proverbs 14:23 says, in all toil there is profit, but mere talk tends only to poverty. In all toil there is profit. Sometimes I kind of think, why are we doing this when you could have a machine do it so much quicker? You know? But there's profit in the toil. In the fact that you're doing it with your hands, in the fact that you're taking the long way around, there's some sort of profit. God builds character in you when you have to do things for yourself. Proverbs 28:19 says, whoever works his land will have plenty of bread, but he who follows worthless pursuits will have plenty of poverty. Now, is a new Command and Conquest or PlayStation game in the category of plenty of work bringing plenty of bread? Or is it in worthless pursuit bringing plenty of poverty? I mean, how many people actually make a profit playing video games? I actually knew a guy whose job it was to play video games and test them for things. You know, he was like, see, I told my mom I'd find something to do. It doesn't always work, okay? I've only met one of those. Now, but I used to meet students at university whose parents paid for everything. And then you meet the students whose parents pay for nothing. And then there's everyone in between. You know who are the students with the best work ethic. It's not that poor people's kids turn out better. It's that they're being forced to work for something. Their parents said, hey, this is what I'm helping you with, but this is what I'm not. You've got to do it. So these guys that were working one or two waitering jobs at different restaurants and coming to class, they never skipped the class because they were paying for it themselves. But the guys whose parents paid for everything, books and tuition and clothing and rent and pocket money and everything, those guys were skipping class all the time, and they had so much free time that they started pursuing other distractions. Excessive clubbing and video games, and today they would include things like hours and hours on Facebook. Work saves you from sloth. Again, I'm not saying convenience is bad, but when you have so much convenience that you have so much spare time that you're not doing anything, you know, fire your gardener and go and pull some weeds yourself. It builds character, and it eats up time that you would be spending on Facebook anyway, right? Okay, so don't go home and fire your mate, by the way. That's one of the application points. Pastor said, no, don't go home and fire your mate. Thank God for your mate. Make sure you pay her well. Ask him to show you ways that you can use your spare time for his kingdom. And then when you get frustrated when your convenience is taken away from you for something, or your mate doesn't pitch for work or something, your mechanic takes too long to fix your car, realize that your happiness is not supposed to be linked to your convenience. Okay, that's your main application point from what Solomon's saying. When your convenience is taken and you start getting upset, you know that you've put too high a price on your convenience. That's maids. What about money? Money is a category of things that people try to find happiness in. Now, money has come up in the past, and it's going to come up in more detail later on, so we're not going to really plunge into that, but read verse 7. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. Friends, Solomon had money. This was the richest man alive. He was the Bill Gates of today. You know, I was reading about the Sheikh of Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates, and he, you know, he lost, when the recession hit, he lost more money than most Western countries have as their GDP, and it was only a third of his wealth. I mean, it's mind-boggling how much wealth that guy has even now, that he's lost 30% of it. Solomon would have made him look like an intern on a student salary. Solomon was so wealthy that you will never get your mind around it. They said that he was so wealthy that if somebody saw a piece of silver lying in the street, they wouldn't bother to pick it up because everything was paid for. You know, if you go to Dubai, all of your if you're a citizen, all your education is paid for by the sheikh. No one there pays taxes because the sheikh pays for everything. I mean, if there's a pothole in the road, he fixes it on his dime. If there's a hospital needs building, he builds it. Schools need building, he builds it. Anyone needs to go, anyone can go to university anywhere in the world, and he pays out of his pocket for that. Did you know that? I mean, wouldn't that make you happy? Solomon says no. No. Even though I had all these things, flocks and herds, that's how people kept their wealth in different types of flocks. So if a disease would come and wipe out one flock, you still had a different type. You had goats and you had oxen and those kinds of things. What I want to focus on here is his diversified portfolio. You know, he's got various different flocks. He says that he also had silver and he also had gold and he also had treasures from various kings and various princes. He had all sorts of valuable items. So today we would buy expensive art as an investment, right? Or a Rolex as an investment, or some valuable treasure. As well as having cash in the bank, as well as having your various different stocks and buy gold in case the one stock drops and the gold goes up or something like that. You guys know what I'm talking about, right? I don't. But Solomon had all of this, and he understood that you want your money in all these different types of ways. And the reason I want to focus on the diversity of his portfolio is that money in itself, we all understand the pitfalls that come with that, but when you start diversifying in that way to keep your money safe, sometimes what happens... Just pause for a second. That's a very good thing to do, by the way. Solomon tells us that later, and in the book of Proverbs, it's a very wise way to use your wealth. But when you do that, often you start to think, my wealth is safe. You know, I feel sorry for people who just have a bank account that's being chipped away at inflation. I've got this stock and that stock, and I feel sorry for people with only money in those stocks because I also have gold shares, so that if the one stock goes, then the gold will go up, and I've also got properties, and I've also got, you know, whatever, futures and options and all that different stuff. I've got it because my wealth is safe. Nothing could happen that wipes all of that out. Really? Ever heard of the Great Depression? We're heading into something that if we don't pull out of it now, if we don't pull out of this nosedive, the world could see that again. Another Great Depression. This is why, and we keep going back to this verse in Matthew 6, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where bad things happen to them, like moths and rust and thieves. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Why in heaven? Because that's where true happiness is. That's where your true investment is. That's the one thing that can't be taken away from you, is your salvation and your eternal happiness. Now, another problem with wealth is that it can lead you to loving it and being happy that you have money, right? This is a disease. Some of us suffer from affluenza, the flu of being affluent. 1 Timothy 6:10 says, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. Again, it's not the money that's bad, it's the pursuit of happiness in the money. Proverbs 3:9 says, the exact opposite of pursuing your happiness in the money is pursuing your happiness in the Lord with your money. But notice the reward. Proverbs 3:9. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. Notice God's reward for finding your happiness in Him through your wealth. More wealth. So God's not against you having wealth. He's against you finding happiness in it. In fact, if you manage to find your happiness in God, not your wealth, He gives you more wealth because you're being a good steward of what He's giving you. It's the people who find their happiness in their wealth that are actually asking God to take it away from them so that they'll rather find their happiness in Him. And this is the message of this part of Ecclesiastes. Verse 9 says, so I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. He wasn't only wealthy, he was powerful. He was famous. He was influential, and it was his wealth that helped him to do that. Now, I've spoken to you once about this interview that it's really fascinated me, this interview with Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt is kind of the epitome of the dream guy that everybody wants to be, because he's got like all of these things that you would think would make you happy. His wealth since 1995, he's made at least $10 million or more per movie, earning more than $200 million in 10 years. Forbes magazine estimates his income is $35 million a year. So he's not poor. What about his looks? Empire magazine said that he's one of the 25 most attractive actors in film history. What about his fame? His fame is global. Time magazine puts him in the top 100 most influential people in the world. Forbes put him as the fifth most famous person in the world in 2007. But do you know what Brad Pitt says of this? The status that he's reached? Do you know what he said in this interview about his wealth and about his looks and about his fame and his power and his influence? He said this to Rolling Stone magazine, talking about material success, wealth, looks, fame. Quote, "I know all these things are supposed to seem important to us, the car, the condo, our versions of success. But if that's the case, why is the general feeling out there reflecting more impotence and isolation and desperation and loneliness?" Quite a philosophical question from somebody who looks like Brad Pitt, right? He says, if you ask me, I say, toss all this. We got to find something else. The emphasis now is on success and personal gain. And I'm sitting on it and I'm telling you, that's not it. Isn't that interesting? I'm the guy who's got everything, I know. But I'm telling you, once you get everything, then you're just left with yourself. And it doesn't help you sleep any better. Now, no one's going to want to hear that, but I'm telling you. And in the same interview, Brad Pitt calls himself 80% atheist and 20% agnostic. 100% confused. But this is my point. He obviously isn't factoring God into his wealth and success and power and influence. And that's why he says, he doesn't understand it himself. He says, I know these are the things that are supposed to make you happy, but I'm telling you, I'm the guy that's got it all, and it hasn't helped. Put a long white beard on him, and this could be Solomon talking to you to Rolling Stones magazine. Don't fall in the trap of thinking, if I just got a raise, I'd be happier. If I just get a big bonus this year, I'll be able to do that thing that'll make me happy. If I get a promotion at work, if I get a little bit more influence, if I get a little bit more power, if I get a little bit more money, if my wealth is a little bit safer, I'll feel happy. No, you won't. No, you won't. That's not what's missing. So what is missing? Maybe it's music. It's not maids that make you happy. It's not money that makes you happy. Maybe it's music that makes you happy. Look at verse 8. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the children of man. Now the concubines part we're not going to look at tonight. That's coming up. But verse 8, he says, I got singers, both men and women. Solomon hired live bands to follow him around all day and sing to him. Wouldn't that be cool? Wouldn't it be cool to have your favorite band just follow you around? You know, you've got U2 stuck in your garage, so whenever you feel like listening to something, you just call them and they come out and they just do a rendition of I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For, which is what Solomon would have wanted them to sing. Song about Ecclesiastes. Could you imagine just having people do the music the way you want, the volume that you want, in the order that you want, all the different male and female voices, whatever you want? I can imagine what that's like. It's called an iPod. For those of you a bit older, Walkman. Okay? In Solomon's day, this wasn't very common. People didn't have singers singing to them. Singers were always people who sang in religious ceremonies. All of the singers and choirs that were around in those days were always religious singers. And so in Solomon's court, there would have been people praising God. But you know what he did? He paid them to stop praising God and sing to him. Isn't that interesting? Why? Because maybe it'll make him happy. Wouldn't you just love to come to church one day and just slide your request of your favorite hymns to Shaw before the band starts? And then every time you come, actually, just email him beforehand and say, this is the selection I'd like this week. Can you turn this instrument down? Can you turn this one up? You know, just friends. Some of you do that. Don't. You're trying to find your happiness in the wrong place. Trust me. We're not worshiping you. We're not trying to keep you happy. We're here to worship God together, right? Now, 4,000 years later, we do have music on demand. Any volume you want it, any variety you want it, any genre you want it, any mix that you want. Has it solved the problems of society? Do psychologists and psychiatrists prescribe listening to happy music to solve people's problems? No, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. People try to fill the void in their lives with music. Now, you might be thinking, I don't try to find meaning in life through my iPod. Really, have you ever tried to drive, get stuck in traffic for a good half an hour, and not turn the radio on? Have you ever tried that? Just try sitting there in silence, I mean, choosing to do it. Sometimes you're forced to because your radio is broken or whatever, but you've got all the music that you want, and life's starting to get a little tough. Some of your convenience has been taken away. You're stuck in traffic. It's getting hot. What do? You turn on some music. You try to find a little bit of relief in this life. You find a little bit of happiness in this life. Now, the problem with music is that music can... There's a few of them I'm going to touch on here. But one of them is, music can feed an incredible appetite for selfishness. Music can make you selfish. Because everybody has their own tastes in music. So if you have this type of music on demand, any way you want it, any volume you want it, whenever you want it, you start thinking that the music in the world is there for you. That God created music for you. To keep you happy. The way you like it. Then, you go to a restaurant. And nobody asked you what you wanted to hear over dinner. Nobody asked you if you wanted it live or on the speaker above you in the ceiling. Nobody asked you the volume. And so you start to get a little upset. You see how your happiness has actually been intertwined with music. You don't like this doof, doof, doof that the young people listen to. Now you have to eat to it? It's affecting your rhythm of chewing here, you know? Can't you just turn it down for a little? It's not your restaurant. But you feel you're unhappy that the music doesn't suit you. And then you come to church. Enough said. Three more pitfalls of music. Firstly, music annoys. It annoys people. The volume. If you ever lived in a security complex where there's that guy that's just younger than you and has more energy and more friends and rubs it in your face by playing that thunk 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 music all night long. It's always your neighbor. It's not the one at the bottom of the complex. It's someone else's problem, you know? So yeah, now you have to make rules. Why? Because music, it's out there, you know? You turn up the volume. I like my music loud. Well, guess what? That's annoying to other people who don't. So it makes you selfish. It annoys people. So they came up with the solution to that. Earphones. Now music has another pitfall. It isolates. How many times have you gone over to dinner with a family of people and you're talking to the husband and wife and the three kids are sitting next to each other all bopping to some different beat? They've just tuned out. Technology isolates. You go on your family vacation and on the way there, you know, dad's listening to whatever, Foster and Allen on the radio. So the kids are like, forget this. And they put in their earbuds, and the one's listening to techno this, and the other one's listening to Budo Kes that, and you know, and everyone's just in their own little world. They're not talking. They're not playing games like they used to. I spy with my little eye and all those things. No, they're just listening to music. Technology isolates. I mean, if you just do this experiment with a 4, 5, 6-year-old watching a cartoon. Just step in front of them and say, I love you, my boy. Get out of the way! Yeah, they don't want you to love them. They want their TV. And it's the same when you're in your music in your own little world and you're walking through Edgar's and somebody comes to help you choose the size that you want and they're talking to you, you know? And you're just, can't they see I don't want to talk to them? That's why I got these things in there, you know? So yes, music can annoy you if you don't have earphones. If you do, it can isolate you. Thirdly, music indoctrinates. Music indoctrinates. Music teaches you things, and it teaches you bad things sometimes. Think about the lyrics of some of the songs. You know, I try to have a list of lyrics of really, you know, bad lyrics out there just to give you a taste of it, and I realized it's not even appropriate. The stuff that you can hear on public radio today, I could get called aside by the elders and said, I can't believe you said that in your sermon. So I just decided to leave that part out. But friends, this is not like some macabre poem that I wrote about killing cops and body parts of women and stuff like that. This is what you hear on radio that kids are being exposed to. What you hear when you go to a restaurant. I've literally asked people in shops, you've got to change that music. I go back to the selfish one. But because of the not the type of music, but the lyrics of what's being said. I mean, if I repeated it, Jerry, you would not even believe it. And maybe you've heard those type of lyrics. Public. And our teenagers are listening to that stuff. And they listen to the same song over and over and over. And you know that, you know, compare how many Bible verses you know off by heart to how many complete songs you know off by heart. It is amazing. When, you know, going down memory lane, I'll put in an old mixtape that I made when I was in, you know, grade 9. You stick it in, every single word of every single song, I still know perfectly. I know which song comes next. I know everything about that song, the beat, the rhythm, everything. Imagine I could do that with every verse in the Bible. Music indoctrinates, teaches you. And if we're undiscerning, we have these lyrics flowing around in our head all the time, we start thinking that it's normal when it's not. It's not something that pleases God. Now, I'm not one of these people that advocates that you only ever listen to Christian music. In fact, my belief is that there is no such thing as Christian music. The Bible defines a Christian as a person who is baptized and believes in Jesus. You can't baptize the whole band. You can't baptize the CD or the gospel section of the music shop. That's not how Christianity works. There are Christians who make music about the Lord. There's also non-Christians who make music about religious things. And then there's believers who make music about other things. That's not the point. You can't say, well, this genre God likes and that genre He doesn't. That's not how it works. In different times in history, in different places, in different cultures, there's all sorts of types of music. But all of them have good uplifting lyrics or bad lyrics that tear you down and indoctrinate you and pull you away from the worship of God. And you need to be discerning. It's not about the style and the instrument. It's more about the lyrics. You should be listening to things, and there are things that are out there, and there are things that are written that bring you closer to your Creator, that help you appreciate the relationship with your God. And this is what Solomon wasn't doing. He bought singers for himself that would follow him around, and when he wanted this, he would tell them, and they would sing to him. And he actually took them away from the worship of God to do that. And we do the same thing. Instead of having thoughts lifted up to God when we're in traffic or going for a jog or in the gym or whatever, we fill our mind with something else other than God. Why would you want to do that? Imagine the profit of learning songs and lyrics and hymns and that kind of thing by pumping it into your head so that when you feel something in your heart, you can sing it to God because you got words put to it. Now that's enough for tonight on what doesn't make you happy. I just want to leave you with something. This relationship with your Creator, you can't just get that yourself either. That needs to be earned for you. You're never going to be good enough that God looks at you and says, I like you, come and live with me forever. But you know who did? Jesus Christ. He came and He lived that perfect life so that every single person on earth who wants to put their faith in Jesus can do that. And God punished His own Son. He brought that wrath upon Himself, so that we can put our faith in Him and can be saved from all of that. So we can be saved from a meaningless existence. So we can be saved from trying to find our happiness in all these things that will never bring us happiness. We can find our true joy in the One who died for us, Jesus Christ. Let's pray. Our Heavenly Father, we are again thankful for this reminder week after week in all the many different ways that we sometimes try to find our happiness. Lord, we thank You for these gifts that You've given us. They all come from Your hand. I just pray that You'd help us to be discerning in the way that we use them. That we would use the gifts that You've given us not to distract us from You, but to draw our attention to You. That in every gift that You give us, we would thank You for that gift. We would praise You for it. And Lord, that if there's something in our lives and in our hearts that we cannot thank You for because we feel guilty about them, Lord, that You'd help us repent of that. That we would turn away from that. And Father, that all of our time and energy would be spent in seeking our fulfillment in You and You alone. Lord, we look forward to the weeks ahead in Ecclesiastes as Solomon, really coming to the end of his tether, will bring us to the one place where true happiness and everlasting joy can be found in a relationship with You, our Creator. And we know this can only happen through Jesus Christ. So we thank You in His name. Amen.